Okay, so welcome everybody. Thank you so much for being here. And today, I don't know who has sponsored today's class. Do we have any special sponsors? Yeah. Thank you. Easy Roth Plumbing, as always, but sponsorships are available. So if you would like, please contact Rabbi Mrs. Wolf. We would love to make sure that our classes move forward. Thank you. So last week, we have the privilege to be able to go right back to last week because last week we had our class and we didn't switch off Assisi. Just to say, next class is our last class before Pesach. Okay, so one more class before Pesach with Mrs. Durkind, and God willing, we'll be resuming this class after Pesach, so just so you should know, Be'ezus Hashem. So last week, we spoke from God's perspective. We were speaking about chapter 20 in the Tanya, and we were describing three different ways of looking at the world from Hashem's perspective. What is Hashem's perspective? What is it that we realize when we look at the concept of Achdus Hashem from Hashem's perspective? So first of all, it's not just Emunah, knowing that there is a God and saying, wow, I believe that there is a God in this world. And not just that he exists, but that he's an engaged God. Is that better? That way I could see everybody better. Okay. So not just are we believing that Hashem exists, but we're believing that he is an intimate God. He is an engaging God. He is someone who is extremely aware to and engaged with every single aspect, every single detail of our lives. That's the first thing that we talk about when we talk about Achdus Hashem. Obviously, there has to be this acknowledgement of him. The next piece that we were talking about is the Rambam, this positive mitzvah to know Hashem intellectually. That would be grounding our faith, not just taking that leap of faith, but grounding it and really studying God. So studying the Rambam, studying Chassidus, studying Kabbalah, bringing ourselves to that awareness of Hashem in our lives. Not just do we want to believe that there is a God in this world, but we want to believe in the unity of God. So what does that mean? Realizing and recognizing that, yes, Hashem created systems. Hashem created pathways through which he makes this world function. There's a concept of nature. There's a concept of there are storms. There's something called gravity. And those things we don't even think twice about. But to understand that those things are just the axe in the hands of the woodchopper is deeply understanding that all those systems work together because Hashem is the woodchopper. Hashem is the one who is wielding those systems and making them work in unison. That's another piece of understanding and deeply fulfilling the mitzvah of Achdus Hashem, true unity of Hashem. So recognizing that there are systems, recognizing that they are just tools in the hands of Hashem, and then ultimately getting to this space, and this is what we were talking about for the last two classes, is getting to the deep understanding that all of that is just within Hashem, that the world itself is just subsumed within him. In Hashem's perspective, we don't actually exist. We are like the words that are unspoken within the person. We're the words before we even thought them. And we spoke about the whole concept that mashal of speaking and words and how that's a great mashal for how Hashem creates the world. Because if a person is saying something, a person is saying a word, usually you say something and it's removed from you, it's outside of you, and it's done. That's not the way it is with Hashem. With the Avishter, the actual world, the physical world that he created, it is the same as if we had words inside of ourselves that we have not yet formulated into words in our brain and then spoke. They're still within us. That is how the whole of creation is within God. Now, that's incredible. And at the same time, in our perspective, we exist. We do. We look at ourselves and we say, yes, I am here. I exist. What does it mean that I'm all within God, that the world is within God, that I am nothing within him? I don't see that. I see a real desk in front of me. I see real people in front of me. My perspective is very important here. So now the Alter Rebbe is going to speak a little bit to what our experience is and what's actually happening in our experience and pull it all together to what Hashem wants us to be doing within this world. So in our perspective, creation is real and Hashem is novel, right? Elokos is, oh, that's different. I never heard of that. That's interesting. That's an interesting piece, point. So in order for us to understand how this all happens, that there is a God, and according to him, we are nothing within him, and according to us, he barely exists, how does that all happen? How does that occur? So Kabbalah explains the concept of a world. A world, ha'ilam, right? The word ilam actually comes from the word helem. Helem means to hide. And that is one of the characteristics that creates a world. The fact that Hashem is hidden. That's what means there's another world. And Kabbalah explains there are many different types of worlds. There's not just this world. There's many different worlds, many different, what we would say is like versions of this world. We're not talking about like different planets, or different, you know, and aliens and other worlds, than planet Earth. We're talking about worlds, like even like concepts or perspectives or others. That otherness all has to be based on the fact that Hashem is hidden. Because otherwise, it wouldn't be considered a world. It wouldn't be considered a creation. It wouldn't be considered anything. So the first characteristic of a world is that there's the helem, there's that concealment of God. The second characteristic of a world is self-determination. That I am here, that I exist, that I am myself here, and I'm recognizing myself. That's the second characteristic of a world. A, that Hashem is hidden, and B, that I could see myself, that I think of myself as an existence. Now, that doesn't just happen in this physical world. We also have the same thing happening in the angels' worlds, right? And we spoke about this once, that an angel is also a yesh. A yesh is the concept of an existence. What does that mean? Of course, an angel recognizes God. An angel sees Hashem. And yet, his world still has this aspect of Hashem is hidden to him. And that other character trait of, I also exist. I am a malach. My name is Gavriel. I am a malach. My name is Michal. That aspect, that characteristic of I am here, I have a name, I exist, is a characteristic of a world, of a creation, of something that Hashem created, that Hashem put out there. So these two characteristics are very, very important to understand and recognize. The fact that there's the self-identity and that there's the hiddenness of Hashem. Because the more we could understand that, the more we can understand our perspective versus Hashem's perspective, right? That huge quantum leap between Hashem seeing we don't exist, we're all within him, and us seeing, not seeing him at all, okay? So when we talk about higher worlds and lower worlds, what we're really saying is a higher world is more Hashem, less me. The lower worlds are more me, less Hashem. That's how this like development has happened. Imagine like the higher worlds are talking about Ein Sof, right? What is Ein Sof? If we want to categorize all these different worlds, there's about three, basically. There's the Ein Sof, which is limitless God, right? All you see is Hashem. The light of Hashem is so predominant, we virtually cannot see ourselves, like the self part of things, right? I say virtually because Ein Sof is still a creation, right? So Ein Sof is the light of Hashem is just shining. So fully unhidden is God that he is just shining. And the perception, that self-perception piece, that recognizing of myself piece is so low, but it's still there. That's Ein Sof. The next world would be a finite world. The finite world is the world that we live in here, where ourselves are so predominant. Our recognition of ourself and creation and our existence is so heavy and so real to us that God is virtually non-existent. Recognizing him, seeing him, he's barely an awareness for us. We cannot quite perceive him. There was this interesting radio I heard this story, so I wasn't actually around when this happened, but there was a show with a man named Jay Diamond, and apparently he first started out as being a real right winger and then became a liberal. But at the time, he was interviewing this scientific research center that centered on the creation. So they were trying to understand creation from a scientific point of view, and basically the whole story, the whole experience, this interview was about God and creation. And he got a lot of flack immediately after he finished. All these people were calling. It was in New York City. Everybody was really angry and got a lot of hate. One person that called said, listen, I don't mind that you're talking about this. It's fine. But if there's a God, show him to me. Show him to me, right? Let me see him. So what is he trying to say? He's saying, like, if you can show him to me, then of course he doesn't exist. Now, of course, we have a very different view of that. But what Hasidus would say is, if we have a world that a person can even say, show him to me, that shows on the greatness of Hashem's creativity, that he can even create a world, he can create a creation where we can deny his existence. That shows on the ultimate ability of God to create, that he has basically taken all those worlds and developed them from more Hashem, less me, and then the worlds develop to less Hashem, more me, till we can't even see him. And someone on a talk show says, where? Show me God. That shows on the great ability of Hashem to be able to conceal himself and create a world where we think we run our own existence, that we exist, and that's just how it all flows. Okay? So back to the three different worlds. There's Ein Sof, there's finite, and then there are the worlds that kind of like are balancing it. That world, the balancing act of having an absolute awareness of Hashem and at the same time maintains the self-identity, that world is called Atzilus, where Hashem is shining. You can see Hashem clearly, and still the self-identity is there, but it's contained. That's like the most balanced world. And Kabbalah talks a lot about how the beauty of Atzilus, how it's able to be this balanced ability of seeing self and at the same time, absolute recognition of God. And we do not live in the world of Atzilus. I mean, I definitely don't live in that world. I don't see Hashem and myself converge exactly. The light of Hashem, I try to make it present for me, but it doesn't feel as present to me. So we're not definitely in the world of Atzilus. We are in the finite world. So how do we function in that space? How are we supposed to take this information and now make it a practical part of my life? What does that actually look like? So the first thing we want to go back to is looking at the Achdus, right? We were talking a lot about the Achdus Hashem last week. And Achdus Hashem is understanding that all those systems that Hashem has created, the natural world, the way that things progress. Sometimes I look at the weather reports and, you know, how they are so exacting. In this exact hour, it's going to rain 30% and then it's going to filter off. And I remember one time I walked outside and it was raining and I said, but nobody said, like, I never knew that it was going to rain. I wasn't told. I wasn't informed. Nobody knew about this. And the idea is that in so many ways, we attribute the power or the knowledge to others, right? To the meteorologist or to the newscaster or to my phone. Whereas the one who is actually controlling the rain or the weather is Hashem. But we often forget that because we get lost in all the intermediaries that are delivering that message to us. So instead of actually seeing God, we're seeing the weather report. And the weather report said this, and that's what I'm going to just stay with, like the blinders, like we were talking about last week. So what do we have to do? What do we have to do in order to function in this world, bring Hashem into a reality when it's not really a reality that he created us with? He created this world to conceal himself entirely. And yet we are assigned the task to perform Torah and mitzvos and to believe in him and to reveal him. So what does that look like? How do I make that something that I practically can do? So I want to give you an example, and I'm sure a lot of you can relate to this, where imagine a person who is either utterly dependent or heavily dependent on another person. So imagine a child, a baby depending on his mother, sometimes an older person entirely dependent on their caretaker. Imagine a person who works for an employer who, because he's working for that person and that person basically pays him everything that he needs in order to sustain his family and pay his rent, he is in ways very dependent on this person. Now imagine that person who's an utter dependent looks to the person that they are gaining everything from or receiving everything from and completely denies all of it. Complete denial, right? So what their experience is, I don't owe you anything. You're nothing to me. I don't care about you, right? That complete lack of recognition that this person is providing, taking care, giving to them. The typical mashpia mikabel dynamic, where, for example, let's say, what do you say? A selfish person, or a person who's blind, right? Because I'll tell you why. Why does a person naturally do that? I know that I've done that a lot in my life. Why did I do that? Because it's uncomfortable to be dependent on another person. You feel like you owe that person. It feels like too much to receive. It's scary to be vulnerable to that extent. So what we'll do is we'll build up stories in our head to resist being vulnerable or receive or be dependent on another person. And we'll tell ourselves, it's fine. We could get along without them. We don't really have to. Or we'll literally just put blinders on and not look at it because it's so uncomfortable to look at. Right? So we've probably been in both of those situations. I know I have, where I've been on the giving end and felt like that person was not receiving me or totally ignoring the fact that I was providing something for them. Right? So to give you a quick example, so I'm a marriage coach and I was offering to do some coaching for free for someone because they were having a harder time. And I'm just doing it because I really believe in what I do. And then she kept on not showing up to my coaching sessions. And so I am giving, what do you say? So you could say she's taking advantage, or you could also say that it's so hard for her to acknowledge that she's receiving something here. It's too much for her to take in. It's too humbling. It's too embarrassing. It's too vulnerable to really recognize that. So there's like this mental block of what is occurring here, that I'm bringing this to her. It would almost be doing her a favor to charge her so that she doesn't have to put up that mental block and not receive and then actually show up. Maybe she would show up. So what is interesting about that? It's not, I don't feel badly, right? I don't feel badly like, oh, she stood me up. It's not about me. It's more about realizing that it's too hard for her to receive this gift because it's too vulnerable. It's too much. Now, on the flip side, I've definitely been on the other end where I have felt like I turned a blinder on, let's say, my mother offering to help me with the kids. So my mother would come and like take the kids out for a little bit, and then she would come back and bring them back, and I would just be like, thank you. You know, thanks so much. But was I really recognizing what was happening here? I live in my own hometown, the place where I live. I have my mother who I trust entirely with my children's lives, and she could take them out for an hour and I don't have to think twice about it. And she'll return them, you know, lunched or fed. She might even do something like give them baths and bring them back in pajamas so they're ready for bed, like something like that. And I would totally not fully accept, realize, receive that because it made me feel uncomfortable. I liked thinking that I'm the person who runs my life and I'm all powerful and I'm in control and I don't need anybody. I want to be a rock and not let anybody else in. Now, why are we talking about all this? Because this is the source for the hiddenness of Hashem in our world. And the way to work around it, this blockage, right? The yesh, me seeing myself as a soul independent existence. That's what works against me realizing that Hashem is taking care of every aspect of my life. It's like the selfish child who is totally not recognizing that every single step that the mother is taking is there in order to sustain them and take care of them and be there for them. But the child will never really understand it in ways until they're old and doing the same thing themselves, right? Until they have their own children and realize how much their mother put into them and invested in them and was there for them. Because it's so hard to receive that and create an awareness of that, the humility that it takes to deeply acknowledge that is the first step. So when we're talking about how to work around this, to work around the yesh, the yeshness, which means like the existence part of ourselves, where we feel like I exist, I am here, I am self-sustaining, self-determination, I choose my own life and where I go and what I do. The way to work around that is to first have a deep acknowledgement, a deep humility experience where I am not in control of my life. I am not the one who has all power. I think that I can write the script and follow through with it, but I keep on realizing that I am not the one who writes the detailed story of my life. Hashem is. So there's that first piece of let me acknowledge with humility, almost like if anyone here has any experience with the 12 steps, it's the first of the 12 steps, which is there is a higher power. And I have to acknowledge that and see that. And if I could just live with that even for the rest of my life, then what I'll be doing is breaking out of the world that I'm in and jumping up to a higher world. Because again, what is a world? First characteristic is hiddenness. Hashem's hiding. The second characteristic is myself, that I exist. But if I come to a space of less of me, which is what humility is, less of me and more of God, what I just did was, it's almost like my kids play, you know, these computer games. So I've just gone up a level. I've gone up to the next level. What I've done is a little bit less of me, a little bit more of God, and I've just merged into a different world, another world where in my mind, in my reality, there's a little less hiddenness of Hashem and a little less of my own existence and my own power and who I am, my yesh, and instead a deeper acknowledgement of Him. So the very first step of all of this is to first acknowledge Him with humility. The second step would be to look at conceit. What is conceit? Conceit is that I don't need Him. I know He's there. I acknowledge His existence. I don't not believe in God. I believe in God. I know that He runs the world, but I don't want to look at Him too much. I do my thing, He does His thing, and we each let each other be. That concept, right, is, yes, recognizing Hashem, but the yesh part of it, the conceit, the ego of I exist and He exists and we're equals and we'll leave each other alone, that piece has to be worked through too. How does one work through that? I don't need Him, I exist, and I don't need to worry about Him. Right? How do I work through that? An interesting thing to look at is the concept of anger. I know I'm jumping, but it will bring together this concept of conceit. What is anger? The Torah describes anger as an equivalence to idol worship. And it's a very interesting sentence. Why is anger like idol worship? What about anger is like idol worship? Idol worship is one of the worst sins ever. Right? The very first mitzvah we've been talking about this entire time is recognizing Hashem as the sole God. Idol worship is bad. Anger is a midah. It's not even considered an avera. Why would we say anger is like idol worship? So what is it truly? What is idol worship? Idol worship is not like what we've thought of old, where it's people bowing down to, you know, stone figurines. Idol worship is saying that there are many different powers, and those powers affect me. When I say that, that's polytheism, right? That's saying that there are many different things that are controlling my world. They all have energy, and they're self-sustaining, and they affect me. One of those is me. When I'm experiencing anger, when I'm getting upset at someone, at something, at myself, what I'm saying is that I have power, I'm self-sustaining, I have energy, and I stand. And then something came in my way and ruined what I thought I was supposed to be doing. Anger is not acknowledging Hashem. It's the direct opposite. Just like gossip, that conceit, that concept of I stand, I am, and yeah, there's a God, but I do my own thing. Anger is in the exact same way expressing that I have an opinion. I am the one who run my world, right? So we have all experienced this where someone somehow cheated us, worked against us, didn't fulfill the vision that we had for whatever it is that was supposed to happen. And I'm saying it in a flippant way, but I shouldn't be. We have that in very painful ways, right? So married someone who didn't seem to be the person that I wanted to marry, is not the person he presented himself as. Had a child that is not what I planned, right? Either special needs or has a personality that works totally against my personality and is extremely challenging and extremely difficult. Getting angry about that, which I want to say is very natural and human, and I'm right there with you, but that anger is an expression of deeply negating Hashem's impact and his soul impact on my world. That anger is saying, I have impact on my world. I am in control of my world, and something is working against me. I am powerful. But that is an untruth, right? That is in ways of Vaidazara, because there is no other power besides for Hashem. Hashem holds soul power. Nothing else has its own energy. He is the one that sustains every aspect of our life. So when we're expressing anger, although it's not an actual avera, unless you, you know, God forbid you do something with that anger and you damage someone, you hurt someone, that still itself, that midah, is in a very deep way a negation of God. And that's not something we want to be experiencing, right? We don't want to be in that space of saying that I am here and he is not, and I am the all-powerful, and for some reason he's not doing what I wanted him to do. So where do we go with that whole concept? Where do we take that and deeply bring it together to what we were talking about earlier? A long time ago, we were talking about klipa. When we spoke about klipa, we said klipa means shell. What is a shell? A shell is something that covers over something else. It conceals it, and it doesn't allow it to be revealed. It gives it form. It makes it look like something, and it doesn't allow it to be revealed. Klipa is the world that we live in. It covers over Hashem. It doesn't allow him to be seen. It doesn't allow him to be revealed. And what it does is it gives form and it says, I exist. I am here. I am. And when we talk about the concept of klipa, oftentimes we talk about it in a way like it's terrible, it's terrible. All it's doing is, all it is it's a world. That's what a world is. Those two characteristics. Again, hiding Hashem and saying that I exist. That's what klipa is. And the more that we could work with the klipa, recognize that this is a klipa, recognize that this is the way Hashem wants this world, and peel away the klipa, the more we're shifting out of this klipa into a different world, another klipa, where we're looking at Hashem and saying, I'm uncovering your hiddenness a little bit more. And I'm pushing myself aside a little bit more so that I could see you. the more that I could shift those gears to be able to raise myself from world to world, the more I am uncovering layer upon layer of the world that Hashem created. And the more that I can do that is I'm bringing Geula into the world. What is Geula? What is it? What's the world supposed to be like when Mashiach comes? The recognition of Hashem is going to be like Kamayim Liyam Machasim. Like, it's going to be absolutely revealed. We're not going to have any more hiddenness. We're going to be able to see Hashem in his entirety. We're literally going to be able to see God like our neshama sees Hashem at every moment of our lives. Every time that we shift from one concealment to another, a little bit more of a revelation, still concealment because we're still in this world, but a little bit more revelation, what we're doing is we're experiencing a concept of geula, an aspect of geula. I want to give you an example. So I was speaking to a woman, and she was sharing with me how she was in a lot of pain around what her husband was doing. I'm trying to remember what the specific example was. Something that her husband was doing, and it brought a lot of pain into her life. And we were talking about it, and I held her pain, and it's very important to hold our pain because we are human and we are real. And at the same time, as we were, okay, now I'm remembering. As we were, okay, this is the story. The story is that she, what? I'm not sharing with you the specifics because that's not important. It's also her story. But imagine a woman who wants to, I'm trying to give an example with not giving, okay, I won't go into any of the details. The point is that as we were speaking more and more, I heard a limitation. The way she was looking at a limit. So let's say when it comes to finances, right? She was saying, my husband's not making enough money, and therefore he can't provide this. He can't provide that. And what I'm hearing is a lot of limitation. What is limitation? It's klipa. It's yesh. It's this and nothing else. To me, it's very closed, right? The energy is not flowing. Hashem's energy, Hashem's light is flowing. There's no end to light. It just flows. It's open. It's revealed. It's constant. When a woman is experiencing limitation, that makes her feel immediately lack of Hashem in her life. Why? Because if she has a recognition of Hashem and his bounty and his abundance, she feels that she experiences that. So what was happening with this woman? She was feeling limitation. Why? She was attributing power, right? Financial to power to either finances, to the bank, to her husband, to a paycheck, to how much they said they were going to pay him. All of that is very much a limited mindset. It's very closed. This is what it is. They said they're only going to pay him this. This is only how much we're going to make for the year. This is only how much I could do. All of that is very restricted. All of that is very klipa mindset. A real mindset, a godly perspective would be, I'm not going to attribute power to the paycheck, to how much they said they were going to pay him, to my husband being the keli for the money. I don't want to have any sort of limitations. Yes, I have to live in this real world, this physical world, but I also don't want to, in my perspective, to be limited. Hashem is an all provider. Hashem could bring whatever he wants to my life. He could sustain me in whatever way he sees fit. He could decide one day, you know, something very interesting, right? That just happened in my world that I'm just realizing that happened. So in our family, I recently just made the decision. I have, Baruch Hashem, I have relatives from both sides of our family. So I have my family and my husband's family both living here. And so what I decided to do, which I thought was really nice, was let's get together once a week and we'll have supper together, right? So I'll have my sister-in-law come for supper, and I'll have on the other side all of that family come for supper. Now what just happens? They're coming to me for supper, which is so exciting and I love it and it's not a big deal. But now that mom doesn't have to think about supper anymore. Let's say, you know, a few days before she was thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't know, put food on the table, the timing of actually making the food, the money it takes to get the supper on the table. She wasn't like, she was, let's say she was struggling. Now, out of nowhere, just this new idea came up, and she doesn't have to worry about that anymore. It came out of nowhere. I'm not saying I'm God, right? But the idea is like, this wasn't something that was planned, and things like that happen all the time. If I could be open to Hashem being the source and Him bringing to me what I need in whatever way is possible, that's me embracing a mindset of, one, acknowledging that Hashem is there, having that deep sense of humility, and two, less of my gossas, my conceit, my yeshness, my existence part of myself, less of me looking at the world as existence and the rules and the structure of it, and more of Hashem's perspective, Hashem's light, Hashem's all abundance, translating into my real world. So what does it look like to start looking at the klipa around me and looking at it as something different? Maybe I could translate all of that and say, you know, people say hashtags all the time. I don't have social media, but I know there's a concept of hashtag, right? So if I were to say, I have this problem, I have this issue, and realize this is hashtag klipa, hashtag limitation, hashtag Hashem's not Hashem's perspective, you know, and put it all under those categories of this is that mindset, this gullus mindset, that limited perspective, this klipa perspective, this helem perspective, and instead say, how can I channel a little bit more of not a vaydezara perspective, but a godly perspective, an achdus Hashem perspective. Hashem has power. Hashem is all powerful. Can I bring that into my real world? And sometimes what that means is actively letting go of my feeling of I'm in control of all of this. And instead, relax into Hashem is taking care of all of this and feel the freedom that that brings to you. We're now coming upon Pesach, and this is the entire theme of Pesach. The theme of Pesach is we were in Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim comes from the word Meitzar, which means limitation, literally limitation, a boundary. We were stuck in Mitzrayim. We were enslaved in Mitzrayim. There was no way that a nation can come out of slavery and go from slaves, absolute slave mentality, limited mentality, victim mentality, to Hashem's blessed nation. There's no way that could happen. And Hashem took us out of those limitations with every makkah, with every mitzvah that He gave us in Mitzrayim. He gave us that opportunity to break out of those limitations, break out of the helem, break out of the world that was denying God and seeing ourselves as something, and open ourselves up to a larger world, a more abundant world, something different. Until we literally were able to come out of Mitzrayim, Hashem took us out and empowered us future generations, to be able to do that on our own. That now we're able to constantly go through that flux of, I feel limited. I could break through this. I could work through this. I could open myself up to Hashem in my life, and He will carry me. I know He's carrying me already. I just have to recognize it. Act from that space. What does act from that space mean? It's like the phrasing of the whole story. Let my people go. Right? What is that? It's let go. Even Am Yisrael themselves, they had to see themselves as let go. I have to let go of thinking that Paro is important, that he has power. Power, right? He doesn't have power. He is nothing. He is just an axe in the hand of the woodchopper. Hashem could decide at any point to make him nothing, which he was, which he became. I have to let myself go and experience my own internal liberation, my own internal Yetzias Mitzrayim, where I'm able to recognize more Him, less me. And in that surrender, I'm able to experience true freedom. That's what Pesach is, that true freedom in surrendering myself and recognizing Hashem is the all-powerful and that He cares about me. and he loves me, and he lovingly can take me out of Mitzrayim and sustain me through the desert and give of himself to me, marry me in the desert, create a relationship with me because he chooses me. That's a lot to receive. It's very hard for us to recognize that. It's almost bewildering. It's too much to look at. So we want to negate it. We want to look away. We want to say, it's just not possible for the creator of the entire world, for the cosmos, to care about me and to literally be there holding me in my own personal Yetzias Mitzrayim, and yet he is. And if we can be humble enough to recognize it, right, that acknowledging it, and to be less conceited and welcome it and say, Hashem, I'm utterly dependent on you, and I'm looking at you as if you're really there, right? You're really there taking care of me, then I could be day in, day out, experiencing my own personal Yetzias Mitzrayim. So I just want to give us a bracha that as we work through the days leading up to Pesach, we should be entering into that festival of freedom, already feeling free, so that when we live those 8 days, where that is the theme, there's that empowerment that we could be experiencing it already, we could make that huge push and experience an ultimate geula for the entire world. And stream.